May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Amen. Please be seated. I'd like to talk in some ways about three of the lessons today, this lesson from Ezekiel and the lesson from Romans and the story of the raising of Lazarus that we hear in the Gospel of John. And surprisingly, sort of to me, it's really in Romans that I sort of come down and rest. But I want to say something about Ezekiel and John both. And quite clearly, the themes that we're working with are life and death and what are the situations that these texts are addressed to. In Ezekiel, I think it's pretty important to know that when he was speaking of these dry bones and how can these dry bones live, he was speaking to the people of Israel in the midst of their exile, their Babylonian exile. And so Ezekiel was speaking to a people whose world had been just overturned. Jerusalem had been overrun. They had been taken off to Babylon into captivity and made slaves there. And so it was from that perspective of historical desolation that this prophetic word, and this is prophetic poetry. I mean, it's like these bones, what can make these bones live? And so Ezekiel goes through this sort of poetic drama where flesh comes and breath comes and the dry bones are made to live again, and clearly it is God who brings these bones to life. God is the God of life, and that's kind of the theme of these lessons. When we turn to the Gospel of John, I think it's important there to remember that John is by far the latest of the four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, known as the Synoptics, were written sort of around 70, 65 to 75 to 80. And John is perhaps 15 to 20 years later than that. And so what John also reflects is the reality that for the first Christians, they were dying. And if you will remember, in Paul especially, there was a sense that what had happened with Jesus and in his resurrection was so momentous that history itself was coming to an end. And they didn't quite know how that was to occur, but they were certain that history was in its phase of consummation. And so to adapt yourself for a long historical sojourn was irrelevant because reality itself was coming to an end. And that proved not to be the case. And here we are 2,000 years later, still trying to adapt ourselves to life in history. And so this story of John and the raising of Lazarus, and again, that who Jesus was, who Jesus is the life bringer. And God is with him, and he brings life. And he brings life with his word. I mean, that was addressed to a Christian community that was beginning to see a perplexing development. The promise that they had thought was certain was not being fulfilled. And so how do we interpret Jesus in a somewhat larger context as, again, the life giver and the one who will promise resurrection to his followers? So that's, I think, all of that's going on in the Gospel of John. Also, the irony. John is the most ironic of all the Gospels. You see it especially around the stories of Holy Week when Jesus is being arrested. They speak about the great solemnity of their religious holiday and how they didn't want anything to get to interrupt that or somehow displace it while they were crucifying the Son of God. they thought they were about their religious ceremonies. And in this story as well, what finally is the tipping point, the straw that breaks the back for the Pharisees, was this encounter with Lazarus. And it was so disruptive. People were so excited about the good things that Jesus was doing that the Pharisees and the religious leaders decided that they better really figure out a way to kill Jesus because he was causing too much trouble. And so you go into the irony of the high priest Caiaphas saying, don't we think we ought to take care of this troublemaker Jesus? It's better if one guy dies than the whole country gets obliterated. And of course that again, unwittingly in the mouths of the Pharisee is that sense of Jesus dying for his people. But again, ironically. So now to Paul. So Paul just jumps right out of the gate here. What does he say? To set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace. The mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. So where does that leave us? Are we not in the flesh? And yes and no. Yes and no. The language that Paul uses here, and I'm going to slow down a bit because I think it's pretty important. And it's important not only for us here in 21st century Livingston, but it's important as a way to understand some of the dynamics of the Christian tradition. And one of the things about the Christian tradition is that we've always been pretty ambivalent about the body. And we've been ambivalent about sex. And we have tended to, I think, misread what Paul is saying here, as if life in this body that we all experience, is bad, and that we are to direct our attention to something disembodied, kind of airy, spiritual. How do we be spiritual and not so fleshly? And I say this is ironic because of all the great religious traditions of the world, we are the most, and the technical term would be incarnational. And of course, that has a funny sort of literal incarne. Chili con carne. Chili with meat. The spirit in the meat is kind of one of the central moments of Christianity, one of the central truths around which our whole tradition revolves. And so when that we have, in history, turned out to be very judgmental toward the body, disparaging of the body, disparaging of our physical existence, that I say that's ironic. And so what is Paul saying here and how does it mislead us? And for Paul, there is this realm, and he calls it the realm of flesh. And the Greek word for that is sarx. And sarx is not the body. There's another word for that. It's called soma, from where we get somatic, psychosomatic, soma, the body. But sarx is the realm that, and this is very funny, this again, the ironies. Sarx is the realm that, paradoxically enough, refuses to be a body, refuses the adventure of real incarnation. And why? Well, what happens to us in our bodies? We age, we get injured, we get sick, and we die. So bodily, it's like our bodies capture every bit of our human vulnerability. And with our minds, we apprehend the inevitability of death, and we know that that occurs in our body. And so the way of flesh, strangely enough, is the way, it's the human attitude that says, I'm not going to be a body. I don't accept that vulnerability. It frightens me and it makes me angry. It frightens me. I don't want to die. And so there ensues all of that human repertoire of ways of distracting ourselves, convincing ourselves that we're stronger than we are. We can use money, we can use various kinds of power. It doesn't have to be big power. I mean, you know, we've all known people that want to rule a family. It can be power, it can be whatever kind of influence we seek. I mean, all of this turns out to be in service of death. It's like, I'm going to run away from my body, which is where I'm going to die, because I believe what death whispers in my ear. Run away. It's terrible. You can't survive. Death is the end of everything. And on the other side, spirit. What Paul speaks about is spirit. Spirit, again, paradoxically, is that human attitude that absolutely consents to be a body. I accept my vulnerability. I accept that I'm going to grow old. I accept that I'm going to go die. And I'm going to die. And to all of that, I say yes. I say yes, which is an essential part of that, what we are commanded to do. Love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. Well, we can't do that if we are in flight from our bodies. And, you know, I think of Jesus as the most concrete person who ever lived. The person in whom all of his attention, all of his mindfulness, all of his awareness, all of that presence that we recognize in each other, it was fully present in the present moment, which is the only place the body can be. If you want to be in the present moment, you're going to have to be where your body is. Because where else is the body ever but in the present moment? And sometimes it seems, tragically, that the only time a person is really going to be brought into full relationship with his or her body is sort of in that process of dying. They've been sort of trying to hold themselves at arm's length from this experience of the body for their whole lives. But in the moment of death, those two realities are going to come together. And the Christian path says, well, bring them together right now. You know, it's our path as much as it was Jesus' path to be incarnate beings. The way of the Spirit paradoxically directs our attention to becoming more and more and more fully incarnate, more concrete, to live in the present moment where our bodies actually are, and to bring body and mind together into a unity. Not split off in a dualism where bad flesh is over here and good spirit is somewhere up there. I mean, that was one of the thought sort of frameworks that the early church rejected, kind of known broadly under the label of Gnosticism, that really separated body and spirit and said, oh, the worst thing in the world is to be trapped in this rotting prison of flesh. How can I get to the pure realm of spirit? And the early church clearly recognized, and rightly recognized, that this is a complete perversion of the essential message of both Judaism and Christianity, that God is the creator of all of this. And death, though traumatic to us, does not seem to make the same kind of impact on God. Both what we see as life and death as two opposing realms, they both occur within God. And that the message, as you know, today, as always, we know we die, and we know we get old, and we know we get sick, and we know we're vulnerable. And to that, and to us in that situation, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. The one who has brought all of this into being is the God of life. And the God of life promises and extends the reality of life to us. Flesh, that way that Paul talks about flesh, flesh cannot hear the promise of life in the midst of death. All it can see is the dying, and all it can feel is the desire to get away. And that just sets us running in an ultimately futile, pointless, hopeless quest to get out of this. So let's hear that invitation, not to run away from our physical experience and run away from our bodies, but actually to be bodies more and more.